This is Profiles in Risk. Hosted by Nick Lamparelli. Every week, we interview those who risk life, limb, fortunes, career, and reputation, and those who work behind the scenes who look to protect and enlighten us about risk. You can find the show notes and other insurance-related content at insnerds.com. That's insnerds.com. Now, on to the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Profiles in Risk. I am your host, Nick Lamparelli. On this rainy New England morning, I am very pleased to introduce John Sonnenschein. John is a sales executive at SpatialKey, which is a geospatial software platform that's used by countless insurance companies, and I think we're going to dig in to see if it's used in any other industries. But I would like to welcome John this morning.
Thanks, Nick. I'm doing pretty well. I actually am from New England, and so I perked up when you said it's a rainy New England morning, because I haven't dealt with rain in many years out in Colorado.
It's my partner lives in Denver, and he's always touting how Denver has, like, I think it's a common saying, you have like 300 sunny days a year. It's just, I don't think people realize that. I think people automatically assume Denver in snow, but it's actually very dry there.
Yeah, it's, 300 days of sunshine. That's what you hear every single day you meet somebody out here, compared to 300 days of rain and overcast in Hartford, Connecticut, or Syracuse, New York, where I've spent some other time. So I've landed in a pretty nice place.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's we finally got to that point in September where you have to make that tough decision. You know, every New Englander, do I turn the heat on? Like it just seems too soon. But we had one day where the house got into like the low 60s, and it's like, ah, darn.
I think
we need to turn the heat on. Nothing worked. The stove, electric heaters. No, we have to turn the whole thing on.
Summer's over.
Yeah. So, John, good morning. Welcome to Profiles in Risk. You are at SpatialKey. We've had a lot of conversations offline on our own regarding SpatialKey. So could you just spend a couple minutes and just talk about what is SpatialKey?
Absolutely. So SpatialKey is the data enrichment and geospatial analytics hub for the insurance industry. And so we partner with a number of different data providers to serve them up, to serve insurance carriers, reinsurers, brokers, agents, MGAs, kind of, you know, running the gamut on the insurance industry in general, P&C that is. And we serve up all those different pieces of information to them at the point of underwriting, portfolio, exposure management, claims, and event response, so they can make a lot more informed decisions. And so, you know, our platform is purpose built for insurance. And you actually asked earlier on if we serve any other industries. And, you know, while there are some kind of parallels to the work that we do in, you know, real estate and things like that, we really do focus solely on the insurance industry.
Yeah. And we're in this day and age where data is so important. And I think it's understated how important geospatial data is.
Oh, yeah.
I go back to simple things like, I remember hearing stories about Hurricane Andrew, and how way back then, a lot of insurers were shocked and surprised at the length of the height of the losses that they hit. And I think what surprised them the most was that they were getting hit by losses they never thought they would get hit by, because the addresses for those properties were in New York City. And so that, like, it started like then, where insurers didn't even really know where their properties were, and they were putting the bank address as the property address. I'll fast forward the tape to Katrina, and it was the same thing. It was like people, insurers did not know exactly where their exposures are. So could you just spend a couple minutes and just talk about just that simple element?
Yeah.
How valuable and crucial it is to property insurers. I'd also be interested if casualty insurers have a similar desire to know exactly where their exposures are. But let's focus on property first. Talk about how important it is from a geospatial perspective to understand where your exposure is.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, right, the three most important things about anything, location, location, location. And in insurance, it's absolutely no different. If you do not know where your insureds are located, literally, then you're not going to be able to properly gauge that risk. And you're not going to be able to properly price for it. And, you know, your rates are going to be off. And there's just going to be a lot of things that trickle down over time that are going to lead to some sort of loss or devastation of some sort. And so in those coastal areas, you're mentioning, you know, Louisiana, for Katrina, New Orleans, and then up in New York City, Hurricane Sandy, you know, those are coastal areas where people want to live. People will always want to live in those areas, in islands, coasts, even, you know, in the woods, wildfire risk and stuff like that. People will always want to live in those areas. And so being able to understand what the associated risk is and having the science there is the most important thing in insurance, in my opinion, because if you don't know where you're at, how are you going to be able to gauge what the risk is? And so when you're looking at a place in New York City, or New Orleans or Florida or California, you kind of, you know, some buzzers go off in your head. You know, you're thinking flood, you're thinking storm surge. For California, thinking wildfire. There's always something you're thinking about. And you know that those risks are very complex, especially things like wildfire and flood. And so just knowing the exact location, you know, a latitude and longitude coordinate is going to get you a lot closer to being able to understand the full risk, you know, from all angles. And so a lot of times what we see is, you know, at least back, you know, 5-10 years ago, it's getting better, but in terms of nailing down that latitude and longitude coordinate, if you don't have even a proper address, you know, if you're just going off of a street address or something like that, then that lat long is going to be put just right in the middle of the street, or, you know, right in the middle of a zip code or a county or something like that. It's going to be off. And so you're just kind of gauging the risk based off of an arbitrary point. And it's surprising how many insurance carriers actually do that. And so, you know, we totally agree that location is absolutely paramount in insurance. And, you know, a little plug for Spatial Key. We actually have this tool that when you do put your point down at the point of underwriting, you know, on your property that you're insuring, you can actually, if it doesn't look right, if it's on the street, if it's on, you know, in the driveway, if it's across the street, if it's in a completely wrong place, you can actually grab that point, pick it up and put it where it belongs. And so, you know, with things like flood, the elevation is crucial to understanding that risk. And so if you're putting a point, you know, for a property that you're insuring and it's at the mailbox, you know, that mailbox can be 300 feet away from the actual property that you're insuring, and the property could be a few hundred feet elevated more than the mailbox. And so just all these nuances of location, it's so crucial to understand, you know, where exactly you're located, because the nuances of this data, it's unbelievable. And the science is getting better and better and better and more granular with these risks like flood, all these various property risks. And so we're getting better at actually nailing down the exact location of the risk. And so if you don't know the exact location of the insured, you're out of luck.
I'll give a couple of personal anecdotes. So my guess is that for flood, 99% of the first address geocodes that get brought back to you. So if you type an address into Google Earth or any of the other geocoding tools, that pin is in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
99% of the time. It might even be more. And I'm talking just for flood. You know, you can be a few meters off or a few hundred meters off for hurricane or earthquake. And, you know, the law of large numbers really helps you. But I've now seen thousands of flood submissions. And I've seen, as you said, the pin go to the mailbox. And we do commercial properties. So the mailbox could be quite a ways away from where the actual building is. Yep. We saw pins at the nearest intersection. Mm-hmm. Which was difficult because we couldn't, the intersection was surrounded by strip malls. So we couldn't figure out which strip mall was the one we were supposed to be looking at. That took hours for us to figure out. And then weirdly, I would say about 5% of the time when we're dealing with, you know, flood zone-ish properties, the pin would end up in the water.
Yep.
Okay, so from an insurer's perspective, from an underwriter's perspective, I would say the vast majority of time you're either going to overrate the risk or underrate the risk, and both are bad. Like, both are no good. If you're overrating the risk, you're not going to get the business. So you're throwing away potentially good risks because the premium's too high. And if you underrate the risk, oh boy, like that's, you know, expanded out over, you know, thousands of locations. That's a big problem too. And I think flood just happens to be one of those perils where the law of large numbers may not help you, especially if you're getting bombarded with submissions for people that are seeking flood coverage. That means they have some exposure. You're likely magnifying the problem and not actually spreading the risk out. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'd say it's almost a blessing and a curse having this rich information. And so, like, we in Spatial Keys Hub of flood data, we have a number of different providers, and you know, it's getting better and better and better, and just real rich context. And so sometimes, you know, you look at one of these flood maps and you're looking in, you know, the Midwest, and there's intense flood risk and you're wondering how that's possible. And it's, you know, it's a mix of the river flooding and just general inland flooding and elevation and dips in elevation, you know, like valleys and stuff like that. And you know that flood risk is there, but your insured doesn't necessarily know that. And so you have to kind of back it up and prove it to them that, you know, your rates are adequate and that you're not, you know, trying to mess with anyone or anything like that. And so I'd say it's funny because flood insurance is one of those things that only now, you know, in recent history, has it kind of entered the private market. And so, you know, it's been one of those things that the government has really controlled, and their maps are, by their own admission, you know, quite incomplete. And there's some pretty unfortunate statistics out there about like a FEMA and the government and how they kind of handle flood insurance. And it's something, you know, like around half of the flood zones are not like actually flood zones. And so it's really tricky because the general public doesn't necessarily know that, you know, the NFIP and FEMA and all that stuff is incomplete and has gaps and is missing, you know, it's missing a lot of science. And so when they go, you know, and the NFIP rates are very standard and across the board, they are what they are. You can't really budge or change those. You can only get in excess of the NFIP. And so when you're going to a private insurer and you're getting a rate that blows you out of the water, it's because the risk is real. You know, flood insurance has developed, I mean, flood insurance data has developed quite a bit in recent history. And it's far surpassed FEMA and anything that they can provide. And so, you know, with a lot of these data providers, the information you're going to get is significantly better than whatever you've seen in the past, but it's hard to justify when those people haven't seen it in the past. And so, you know, it's kind of tricky for someone like you who's all of a sudden issuing tons of flood policies, you know, justifying just the rates. And then, as you said, you know, there is a risk of under rating and underpricing and missing out on business altogether. And so, you know, I would say that on the side of the data being too good, it's, you know, it's very, very, very granular. And it's gotten to a point where just about any point on the earth or in the US at least, you can identify what that flood risk is. But this risk is changing, you know, and there's a lot of other factors that play into it. And so at this point next year, we might be having a different conversation, you know. It's one of those ever evolving risks that it's going to be tricky to keep up with.
Absolutely. And so just identifying where the structure is to me, is step one. There's still like so much more work to do. And, you know, we've had a lot of offline discussions about this, but now we have an event like, or events like Hurricane Harvey last year, Hurricane Florence this year. And what's interesting is geospatial comes back with a vengeance. And we've talked about this a lot. Can you talk about real-time monitoring of events and how the geospatial tools have evolved to allow insurers this marvelous technology to be able to do stuff in real time?
Absolutely. And so, you know, the data from these events like Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Florence, you know, that happened last week, 2 weeks ago, the data is rapidly being enabled online. And so that is something that Spatial Key does. You know, we take that as a service for the insurance carriers because, you know, a claims team should never be in charge of bringing data online, right? They should be in charge of handling claims and responding to their insureds and making, you know, making those policies whole again. And so with the explosion of data, you know, it can be tough to keep up, but we enabled dozens of data sets over the course of Hurricane Florence and quite a bit more, I think, over the course of Hurricane Harvey, as that one really kept evolving. But basically, you know, with a platform like Spatially, with a geospatial engine like that, what you can do is you can start throwing in all of these different layers from all these different providers that tell all of these different stories. And so, you know, we'll bring in the actual wind footprint and the forecast, you know, and the 7-day forecast, the precipitation forecast, and all that kind of stuff pre-events, pre-landfall. And then once landfall occurs, we start getting the actual data from the ground. And so we're getting the actual flood footprint, you know, every few hours that's evolving. And so we're getting that, we're updating it. And you can see that over time. You know, you can layer in every single one of those to see this flood this flood footprint grow over time, layered in with your unique policies. You can do those intersects to see, okay, as this flood footprint has grown, as the scope of this event has expanded significantly, what policies are affected? How many dollars am I on the hook for? How many claims am I going to have to pay out? You know, who's literally underwater, you know, from a deaths perspective, and you can start bailing people out. And so as that data comes online, you know, in near real time, we're getting everything up there and we're letting all of our clients know, we're letting our prospects know, you know, we enable stuff for our prospects on the fly. And it's really, you know, for a hurricane, at least, it's really a combination of the wind data, the storm surge data on the coast, and then the flood footprint, the inland flooding, all that kind of stuff. And then we also get some aerial imagery. So you can literally overlay your policies on this map and then turn on the aerial imagery from this event, you know, that literally it happened days ago, and you can see, oh, wow, okay, that building is destroyed. This is one of my policies. Okay, that building looks okay. That's another one of my policies. And so just the value of being able to contextualize everything in one single screen is just such a value add, because you know how these events go. You know, it's chaos. It's absolute chaos for an insurance carrier, and we're the ones who have to, you know, deal with it. We're the ones who have to make these insureds whole again and you know, respond to billions of dollars worth of claims. And so being able to have a really easy to use platform to just go on and see what that risk is and what the hits are that you've taken, it's huge. It's monumental, you know, yeah. as opposed to going from system to system to system, looking at weather.com and going on FEMA. Like, it could get very, very crazy very quickly. And then for a hurricane, there are just so many associated risks. You know, it's not just a hurricane. You have the flood, you have the coastal surge, you have potential tornadoes, you have wind in general, you know.
It's more than that though, John. It's also, because of the uncertainty of where the storm's going to go, how it's going to behave, where it's going to end up, there becomes a massive expense to adjust those claims.
Yes.
And so you need geospatial tools. That would be like a sports team not planning for their opponent. The opponent's coming and it's like, we're not going to look at videos. It's like you have to use these real-time tools, in part because you can reduce your adjusting expenses, which in a natural catastrophe are massive.
Yep.
You know, to adjust a single claim, just a single property, could be thousands of dollars. Just to adjust it, send somebody there, fill out a piece of paper or, you know, an Xactware quote, magnify that times thousands and thousands of properties. You have a big problem with that expense on top of everything. And so from a real time perspective, geospatial is the sports coach and the players using video to understand their opponent.
Yeah. Their opponent being natural catastrophes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's spot on.
Yeah. You know, something that we also touched upon, you just discussed using geospatial. We just discussed using geospatial to identify which properties might be at risk. I've actually tried to flip this on its head and say, okay, well, when the event is over, which properties were missed?
Yep.
So it is my hypothesis that, hey, if these are truly 1 in 1,000 year rainfall events, if these are, you know, Cat 2 hurricanes that make landfall, and there are properties in these areas that were not affected, I kind of want to write those properties. You know, it's like what sort of event would have to strike for a claim to hit one of those properties? So from the question to you is is the resolution good enough to be able to figure out, hey, this property was likely in the zone and this probably was not, and I'm pretty much referring to flood.
Yeah, I think from a flood perspective at this point, again, like the science has really picked up, and so some of our providers that we work with, you know, they have pretty granular resolution. I would say for the most part, it's there. You know, there are definitely some fringe spots that might kind of land on the edges of that flood footprint from a data layer perspective, and those might not be, you know, as cut and dry as something that's right in the middle of like 10 feet inundation or something like that. You know what I mean? And so I think it really depends on where you're looking at the data, literally, geographically. And so if you're kind of on the cusp, you know, on the fringe, I think it might not be as obvious as if you're kind of just, you know, underwater. And then there's kind of varying degrees, cause you know, not everyone's going to be a ground up loss. Some people just have damages, you know, and so on. And so it's tricky because you're going off data, right? You don't literally have, you know, someone telling you, hey, like my house didn't get hit, can I get some insurance just in case? So I would say, you know, from a proactive perspective, yeah, I think it's an amazing idea actually. And you're one of the first people to actually mention something like that, kind of using it as a marketing opportunity to line up some regions to see if you can, you know, get some new business there.
Yeah, I don't mind that leaking out, mostly because I've been in insurance for so long. The knee-jerk reaction when one of these events occurs is, yeah, we will absolutely be not writing any more business in Harris County, Texas, and we will absolutely not be writing any more business on the coast of North or South Carolina. Yeah. So I actually feel pretty good about it. It's the industry itself has an enormous emotional disconnect with buying low and selling high. And yep. To me, this is the buy low moment. Can we talk about, are there any applications to casualty insurance?
You know, we do have some clients that use us from a casualty perspective, and we definitely kind of market ourselves as a P&C tool, but our sweet spot is really property. I think at the end of the day, though, understanding that risk, you know, of workers' comp and casualty claims and stuff like that is huge, especially on, you know, like construction sites and stuff like that. You know, it gets a little different. And so I think, you know, it's all useful in general. I think you can definitely, people do use us from a casualty perspective. You know, terrorism and things like that. We do have applications like that, but I'd say, you know, we really do our best work in the property space.
Yeah. Got it. Can we talk a little bit about your background, or the background of employees at Spatial Key? These are not just geographers, right? Because there's a lot more to it. What are the type of employees that you would find if you were walking around Spatial Key?
Yeah, so Spatial Key is actually, we tout ourselves as having a combined 200 plus years of insurance experience on the job. And so, you know, there's about 35 or so of us right now, and a lot of us do have backgrounds in insurance, you know, but not necessarily directly coming from a carrier. And so it's actually really interesting. So, you know, I came from Travelers Insurance. That's where I used to work. And that's where I got all of my insurance experience. You know, fresh out of college, I got an internship there doing kind of geospatial data and analytics. And then I was able to kind of parlay that into a full-time position for a few years. And so it kind of got me tuned into, you know, how cool insurance actually is, at least on the geospatial and NatCat side, dealing with all these hazards and hurricanes and events. You know, it's intriguing stuff. And so that's kind of where I came from. But in terms of the profile of others, you know, it really depends on the area. We have guys who, you know, they've been here for 5, 6, 7, 8 years at Spatial Key. And they don't necessarily come from insurance background. This is where they kind of learned everything about insurance, and they're just, you know, really smart and intelligent, and they just keep growing and keep learning. And so I would say that in terms of insurance backgrounds, you know, we have a lot of folks that come from direct carriers, that have worked, you know, throughout the years there. We have a lot of folks that come from other, you know, solutions providers, solutions and data providers like RMS, You know, we have a few folks from there. And so I think that's what makes Spatial Key so great. You know, we're not all insurance guys and girls. We're a combination of you know, technologists, GIS geeks, insurance geeks, you know, and just general geeks. So, you know, we're kind of coming from all angles here. But we do, like I said, you know, mostly on like the sales and account sides, have a lot of insurance experience, quite a bit of background, you know, both in the US and the UK. So we have, you know, two representatives out in London area in the UK, and they, you know, they have rich experience as well in the industry. And so a lot of our market or client facing folks, you know, they do have a lot of experience. A lot of our engineers and developers, those guys, you know, they've done a lot of different cool stuff. And some of them come from insurance, not necessarily PNC, but yeah, they're all, you know, really into technology and putting this technology into people's hands, you know, to be successful. So, you know, I studied geography at Syracuse. And so I was, for lack of a better term, a geographer, right? Like you said. And
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, I geek out on it. I mean, I think
absolutely.
I think it's so cool. You know, I mean, I joke around a lot. I tell a lot of folks that I talk to, you know, when I was studying geography in college, around the time when everyone's starting to get, you know, internships and kind of stuff like that, everyone's asked me what I'm going to do with my life. And I hadn't really nailed that down. And so I started studying GIS, you know, geographic information systems. And I started getting into the geospatial data and all the analytics and stuff like that. And I just started geeking out on it. And I just got so into it. And that was kind of my path. And so when all my friends were, you know, getting jobs as financial advisors and, you know, working at banks or going to grad school or something like that, I was working on big data initiatives, helping, you know, insurers deal with catastrophic events. And everyone was asking me, you know, how did you get into this? And I said the same thing that you guys were making fun of me for, you know, when you guys were getting your internships. And so, you know, it all worked out. I kind of stumbled into insurance, but I'm glad I did. You know, I think it's so interesting. And I think a lot of the time, a lot of folks do stumble into insurance because one, you know, there's a ton of jobs in insurance. There's a crazy statistic out there about the number of people that are going to be retiring from the industry soon. And it's crazy. Stuff. Right. It's huge. And so there's huge opportunity for young people to get into insurance, but people just don't know, you know, what it is. And they just think about the negative time that they had talking to a claims adjuster or something like that when they got in a car accident. You know, they think about that when they think about insurance, not all of the good that it brings and how much of a service it is.
Completely. So I am not skilled in geospatial. I rely on companies like yours to do a lot of the heavy lifting for me. But let's say I was, you know, youngish with a little bit more time, juggling a few fewer things, and I wanted to start to build my skill set in geospatial analytics. What would you recommend to someone that's just getting started to, you know, get up to spatial key level?
that's a pretty high level. So, you know, I'd say in this day and age, you can learn literally anything on the internet. You just got to kind of know where to go. And so in terms of sort of, you know, there are certifications you can get, and online classes you can take that are real quick and easy. You probably have to pay for those, but there are also service and pay, you know, like a little bit more for a certification, but there are services on sites like Udemy, UDEMY.com. And what they do is they pretty much have instructors sign up to teach classes about literally anything. You know, and so they have JavaScript coding and, you know, HTML and Python, and then they have guitar lessons, you know, they have all kinds of stuff on there. And so I've taken a few of the GIS courses there, long ago, but they have amazing GIS courses and you can really narrow in on what you want to study there. And so if you want to be, you know, a backend developer, you know, you can take a class on that. If you want to be more of a web application guy, you know, you can do that. If you want to understand the ins and outs of geospatial data, you know, you can take a class on that. And so I would definitely recommend, you know, if you, and they're super cheap, they're like $10 a course, and the courses are very very, very, very dense. And so I would recommend something like that. I would recommend, you know, just if you're looking for some general information, you know, take a look at sites like Esri. You know, Esri is the behemoth of general GIS computing tools. And they have a lot of free stuff that you can get up and going. They have a pretty cool conference every summer that they have, and, you know, thousands of people attend. But, you know, Esri is also, yeah, Esri is what I learned in college. That's what I learned GIS on. If you want something even more free, Esri has, you know, free options and stuff like that, but it's not 100% free. There's a lot of stuff that costs quite a bit. And the deeper you get into it, you know, the more it's going to cost. QGIS is a free and open source GIS platform, you know, that rivals Esri. And it's really, really cool to use. And so if you're taking one of those courses, you know, they're probably going to tell you to download QGIS, cause it's free and it's really, really easy to use. It's pretty sweet. So yeah, you know, I would say take a course online, you know, or if you want to go a step further, go and get a professional certification. You know, they'll teach you everything you need to know. But if you're just looking to dip your toes and see if you like it, I would take one of these courses online in your free time, you know, do some research, go to GIS Stack Exchange. They have a ton of forums there and stuff like that. Yeah, you know, and just kind of do some homework online. There's so many resources out there.
We'll put all of those on the show notes. So anyone that's listening, go to the show notes and you don't have to memorize this while you're driving in your car or going for your walk. John, I want to transition over to, I've asked you some personal stuff, but let's dig in a little bit deeper and find out what makes John tick. So I always ask a few personal questions at the end. I'm gonna make you the first of this question.
All right.
One of my listeners said you should ask, and so the question I'm going to ask is, what are you gonna do when you retire?
Hopefully, you'd be living on a boat by then.
Where? No, West Coast, East Coast, Europe, Mediterranean.
Mediterranean for sure.
Nice, nice.
No, what am I gonna do when I retire? I mean, obviously that would be pretty sweet, but I'll probably get bored. You know. I think that's one of the fundamental things about retirement that a lot of people fail to realize. You know, you spend your whole entire life just waiting for that moment where you can do absolutely nothing and then you want to fill your time, you know? And so I'm not really sure. I'm a ways off, you know, I'm obviously saving and stuff like that for retirement, got all that kind of stuff figured out. But in terms of what I want to do, you know, I think it, honestly, like one of my other passions, you know, outside of my career, is food and nutrition. And I would love to open up some sort of, you know, some sort of like nutrition oriented restaurant or cafe or something like that, you know, if I have the free time. And I don't know, it would just be kind of cool, something that a little bit lighter after a career in insurance. Yeah.
No, that seems like it would fit in Denver, Colorado for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. If you had to be isolated on a desert island, What's the one album you would take with you?
The one album I would take with me. Oof. Okay. Let me think about that. Okay.
That's a tough one, huh?
That is a tough one.
Tougher than any geospatial problem you're running into.
Oh man, this is a great question. I I'm a huge fan of the Grateful Dead, but all their stuff is best live. And so I wouldn't take one of their albums with me. You know, it would be maybe a Red Hot Chili Peppers album, maybe like Californication or something like that. If I'm on an island, you know, just relax. Chili Peppers. I always can listen to them, I feel like.
Great album. Love that. I have a feeling that the younger professionals that are listening to this podcast are going to be like, what's an album?
But, yeah, they're okay. Like, I can't just spring my Spotify account with me.
Yeah, yeah. John, are there any tools or techniques that you use that you find help to keep you organized and or productive?
Yeah. So we Spatialkey uses the Google suite of tools. I'm a huge Google nerd. I think that Google is one of the greatest organizations in terms of, you know, how they just bring everything together. And so I'm like fully connect. Spatialkey is a remote company. I'm not sure if I've gotten that point across, but we're distributed, you know, across the country. We all work from home. And so I've got you know, I've got an Apple Watch, I've got an iPhone, I've got my computer, I've got my iPad. I'm very connected. And I actually prefer that. A lot of people say, you know, that's the worst. I really like that, so I can, you know, stay on top of my stuff on the go. And Google allows me to do that. The Google Calendar is so clean. It's so easy to use. Gmail. So Gmail is gotten to a point now where if I, you know, in sales, I'm reaching out to a lot of folks that I've never talked to, right? And so if I call someone, leave a voicemail, and then I email somebody, you know, saying, hey, just left you a voicemail. Yeah, I would love to connect with you. If I don't follow up to that email, if they don't respond, if I don't follow up in like a few days, Gmail, based off of my activity, will literally bring that email to the top and say, hey, you sent this email three days ago. Do you want to follow up? And that's just amazing, you know?
It is.
So I geek out on Google. I think that Google as a whole, you know, we use Google Docs, Google Sheets, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the Google Sites and all those things. I think that Google is one of the, if you can, you know, bring all of your stuff into the Google house, I would say that's one of the best tools, you know, just to stay efficient and organized just when you're on the go. You know, it's very easy to use on your phone, even on my watch. And so, yeah, that's Google is definitely one I would put up there.
Yeah. No, I that helped me yesterday. An email popped up and they put a little note, you have not replied to this.
Yeah.
And so the AI is recognizing from my activity that for those sorts of emails, I generally reply.
Yeah.
I do something with it. Cause I probably didn't even file it away. And so it was helpful. I hit reply and said, so sorry. Google reminded me that I forgot to look at this. So it actually came in quite handy. I wish they would make the, user interface a little bit more friendly. Sometimes I feel lost in the email. Like where am I? Where am I typing here? But generally my God, it's free.
Yeah.
And exactly. You're right, on the phone, it's super clean.
Yep.
And it's super easy to add events. That's very critical for me because I'm, you know, a lazy SOB and I just want to press a couple buttons and go. So, I do love the Google Suite, and like you, I'm like part Apple, part Google. I'm trying to connect the best of both worlds. So we live in awesome times when it comes to technology.
Yeah. And Apple too. Like I'm such a fanboy. Like people are like, stop drinking the Kool-Aid, but I love the interconnectivity of all these applications that I have, or all these devices that I have. So Google, you know, from an application standpoint, they have the interconnectivity on lock, but Apple from a device standpoint, it is so useful, you know, just, I don't know. I find it very, very useful. I try and really just use it for work and not, you know, let it encapsulate my entire life. But it's, I don't know. It's very valuable to me.
Yeah. My final question that I ask everyone that comes on is books. I told you I'm lazy. So I don't want to have to go research books. I would rather my guests come on and tell me about the interesting stuff they're reading or have read. So sure. Have there been any books that you have found to be influential in either your, you know, business and or personal life?
Yeah, there's a book that I've read that a lot of people actually read in high school, and I never read it in high school. It wasn't one of my books that, you know, we read in class. But I found it, you know, to be really, really cool stuff. It's not necessarily groundbreaking information, but for some people it really is. For some people that have never really thought in the way that the book kind of, you know, urges you to think, you know, they come back to me after I recommend it and they say, John, that was mind-blowing stuff. Like, thank you so much. And so that book is Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. I'm not sure if you ever heard of it.
I've not.
Cool. Okay. So yeah, I mean, it's Ishmael is basically, the entire book is a dialogue between two guys, and I won't ruin it, but
it sounds like a Yiddish or a Hebrew word.
Ishmael. Yeah. It has nothing really to do with the Jewish religion. I think that's just the name. I mean, there's a part that explains the name, but in general, the book is just all about why we are the way we are, why we do the things we do, you know, and how most people in life can kind of be boiled down to either givers or takers. You know, if you really think about it. And they use a lot of interesting kind of history and very, very ancient religion, you know, stories of the past to kind of ultimately describe, you know, why we are the way we are. And the whole point is to quote unquote, you know, save humanity from ourselves. So I think it's a really cool book, and it's super helpful. It makes you think about, you know, your small actions and your big actions. I don't know. It definitely plays into business, but it's more so just kind of a philosophical book. That's really interesting. And now, right now I'm reading another book, and this has nothing to do with, really business at all, but it's called Genius Foods. And it's all about certain foods. Again, like I said, I was into nutrition. It's all about certain, you know, foods and diets and things like that, that contribute to positive mental health and, you know, keep your brain from decaying over time as you get older. Foods that kind of limit cognitive degeneration as you grow up. And the background of it is the author, his mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and, you know, they couldn't really figure anything out. And so he started for the last decade, experimenting with food and nutrition, and he found something that worked. And so, really powerful book. I bought a copy for my parents, told them to read it.
Yep.
But yeah, that's just, you know, in terms of who I am, right, all outside of Spatially, that's just, you know, totally up my alley. And so, if you're into that kind of stuff, I would definitely read it. It's called Genius Foods.
Awesome. I'll put those on the show notes. This was fantastic. Time flew by. I learned a lot, of course, about geospatial related items. If someone wanted to get a hold of you, how would they do that?
They can reach out to me over email, or they can give me a call. My work number is 203-794-2666. And my email address is john.sunandshine@spatialkey.com.
I will put those in the show notes as well. John, time flew by. Thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate the insights and sharing your story, sharing the Spatial Key story. I have a feeling we'll be hearing more about Spatial Key in the next 2 or 3 months. So we'll make that happen. But I appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm glad that we can make this work.
Yeah. So my guest this week has been John Sonnenschein, which is sunshine in German. It sounds just like it. So John, thanks again.
You got it. Thank you, Nick.